And a major study of near-death experiences with newly born babies, toddlers, and children up to age five. NDE expert, near-death experience expert PMH Atwater reveals how those who experience a near-death state or other worlds at a very young age are affected for the rest of their lives. PMH Atwater is one of the leaders in this field of near-death studies, and we are back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with PMH Atwater, one of the original researchers, folks, in the field of near-death studies, having begun her work back in 1978. An international authority on the subject, as well as an experiencer who died three times, author of more than 20 books, and has served two terms on the International Association for Near-Death Studies. On that board, she is an accomplished runecaster specializing in the yin or the feminine approach to rune use, and an astrologer, numerologist, and PMH. Welcome back, and what a career you've had.
Well, yeah, it's been 43 years.
It sure is. You know, I cannot go to an event without your name coming up from somebody. I mean, you really
have. Oh, you're
kidding. No, it's amazing. And I'm really honored that you are on the show and have been on the show for so many times. It's fantastic.
Well, it's fantastic to me, too, just hearing you say that.
You are a giant in the field.
I don't feel like a giant. I feel scruffy.
Well, that's good. Do you deal with Raymond Moody anymore?
Well, not that much. I deal mostly with Dr. Bruce Grayson and Kenneth Ring.
Good people. You're all good people in an incredible field, truly. Now, this study is different. Tell me how the idea came forth.
Different.
What happened? How did this start?
Well, it started back in the 80s and 90s when I first tackled children. Because I noticed that child near-death experiencers were different than adults. You know, I'd been doing adults for many, many years. And, you know, it just troubled me that there wasn't really that much work out about children. Yes, there was some, but not enough. So I did my first study then mainly with the younger crowd, that is to say, I was interviewing or working with kindergartners up to in their 20s and 30s, and so forward-looking people, the young, looking forward. But I found some things that really troubled me, and I couldn't get anybody else interested in doing it. I tried and tried and tried, couldn't get anybody else interested. So finally, after all these years, I decided, okay, enough of this. I'm going to go back and do it again, only this time I'm going to go after the older crowd, people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, uh-huh, who could remember having had and validate having had their near-death experience between birth and the age of five. And so I asked them a question. I said, you know, did having such an experience at such a young age, did that have any effect on your life overall? So I'm wanting an essay, really. I want to know about the family. I want to know about the children. I want to know, you know, your folks, brothers and sisters, school, sex, growing up, alcohol, sports, dating, going after a career, falling in love, getting married, having children of your own, having grandchildren of your own. I want to know, did that have any effect? And I'll tell you, George, the essays that I got back, and many times I would go back and I would make phone calls, mm-hmm, or I would talk to them again, maybe through email, if I had questions about it. But, you know, some of these essays I got were so tear-stained, I could hardly read them.
Wow.
One man who was, who just retired, so he's in his late 60s, he wrote me a book, I swear, must have been about 40 or 50 pages, complete with photographs of his family as, you know, grew up,
and
married, all of this kind of stuff. because he'd never been able to tell anybody anything. And now finally he could open up. Boy, did he open up. It's a gusher.
And they never forget, do they?
No. There's no problem with memory. We've already established this with adults.
Does a child, PMH, understand what a near-death experience is when this happens to them?
No.
They don't know what it is, do they?
No. They have no idea. And, in fact, their biggest puzzle is, what is life?
Exactly.
Because they're still in the other world, depending, of course, on the age. Now, if it's a birther, if it's a toddler, you know, they're still over there. They're not here. They're still over there.
Now, most of these children grew up into adults when you interviewed them for the study, or did you also interview little kids?
Well, the first study, yes, I did. The second study, no. So the second study is looking backward. The first study is looking forward.
Okay.
Nobody else has done this, George. Nobody.
No, this is groundbreaking.
Yeah, it's absolutely groundbreaking. Nobody has been able to look at the full span of life from the little bitty kid all the way up to grandma and grandpa. What's the full span? And when you look at the full span, it's surprising, and in some cases it's shocking.
You know what's amazing too is memory. I remember back the earliest I can remember, because I have an event that I remembered. I was 18 months old. My mother and my dad were leaving the house. They were living with his mother at the time, and I was there, and she was going to the hospital to give birth to my sister Gail. And I was 18 months old. I told my mother when I grew up the coat she was wearing when she went out the door. And my sister was born in January 28th, so it's cold in Detroit. And I said, Mom, you were wearing a cream-colored coat, a long one. And she just stopped in her tracks. And she went, yes, I was. How did you know that? I said, well, I was in the bed, you know, with our uncle, and he's rocking me, my dad's brother, and, you know, you and dad were running out the door. And, you know, in those days, you didn't have that 911 call all the time.
That's right.
And so dad was taking mom to the hospital, and I remember all of that and told her. That's the youngest I remember anything, but it was an event that I remember.
Well, most people can't remember... that young. You're an exception there, but child near-death experiencers normally do. Some of them, maybe that might be gone, but they'll get it back when they're an adult. So when it does come back, it will stay. But for most of them, it stays lifelong.
Yeah, it really does. So what did you conclude with these 400-some childhood experiencers?
Oh, gee.
Because I know you concluded something.
You know, well, the main thing I have concluded here is that you and I, the entire public, all of us, we missed it. This out of the mouth of babe syndrome. We all get tied up and are so hanging on the edge here. When the little children talk about their experiences, they talk about God, they talk about angels, they talk about all kinds of things, and we're hanging on this. And of course we do. You know, this is out of the mouth of babes. But who does follow up 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, 40 years later? Who's doing follow up on child experiencers? We've got a few that maybe followed up, maybe 10 years, maybe 15 years. That's it.
Great name for the book, The Forever Angels, about these childhood experiences. When they related the stories to you as adults, how did it affect them? And how has it affected them? Because that's the basis of your study as well. What did these near-death experiences do for them as they grew up, PMH?
Sometimes it was very mixing. Sometimes it helped, sometimes it didn't help. It depends on the individual. And I want to explain that by saying many of these children are still on the other side. So their puzzle is how to behave like other kids, like other kids in the family and school. These kids come back, almost all of them, more intelligent than the average child, many of them highly intelligent. So they know their parents. They know more than their parents. They know more than the school teachers. They know more than adults. And so their puzzle is, how do I handle this?
Are they healthy?
Most of them are. Not all of them, of course, but
right.
Most of them are.
So whatever put them in that near-death state, they've been able to battle that. Okay.
Right. Many of them, yes. Of course, not all of them, but many of them, yes. So they're having to grow up in a world that that confuses them. With many of them, it puzzles them because it doesn't match what they know. It can be extremely confusing. Let me get
an example.
Yeah, drawn to and highly proficient in math, science, and history. You wouldn't think they would be drawn to that, but they are. Adult experiencers are just the opposite. But with a child, they're more experienced in math, science, and history. 93%.
That's huge.
Of those nearly 400 people
now,
drawn to that field.
Of those 400, what were their general age brackets primarily?
You mean when the experience occurred?
Or no, when they were telling you the stories or the part of the study. Were they mostly adults at that time?
Well, the first study, they were children and young adults. With my second study, all adults, many of them mature adults.
Who had these experiences when they were 5, 6, whatever, maybe even babies, right?
Right, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
What kinds of illnesses got them to put them in that near-death state?
Sometimes hit by lightning, sometimes freezing, drowning. Most of these cases
by a car,
come from abuse
whatever.
Issues, drowning, high fever, this kind of thing.
Did you find that most of these children who now became adults, beyond the gift of, you know, mathematics and things like that that they picked up, were they nice people or were they bitter?
Well, let me give you some figures here.
Okay.
34%. Were positive about having their near-death experience. 61% were negative.
That's a lot.
61% were negative because, get this, because growing up and finding their place in life was just too difficult.
Interesting. It followed them along as they were growing up.
Well, they couldn't figure things out, or if they did, they were bullied. Or they didn't fit in, or they were lonely, or it seemed like they just didn't quite fit in with the crowd. Or if they did fit in,
were they introverts?
Some were introverts, some were extroverts. Didn't seem to matter. Whether they really jumped in and became sports and parties and all this kind of stuff, or whether they drew back and were more shy, it didn't seem to matter. They still didn't quite fit in. They still didn't quite understand. It took them a little bit longer. These are non-traditional, non-conformist attitudes. They have a unique way of thinking.
How about relationships? Was it difficult for them to have a relationship?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a biggie.
Yeah, I would think so.
Oh, yes. Yes, because, you know, they were just, a non-traditional, non-conformist attitude. Of course they didn't always fit in.
Did they know they had near-death experiences, or did they need you to tell them that?
How do I answer that? Their feeling, their knowledge of the world was very different from other people. No, not all of them knew they had a near-death experience. No, they didn't necessarily need me to tell them. Sometimes they read about it. Sometimes they heard about IANS, the International Association for Near-Death Studies. Sometimes they got it in the news, talking to other people, but they didn't necessarily connect the dots. They just felt that they were different, nonconformist. They didn't quite fit in, and they didn't necessarily know why. Some of them did when they got older, like this fellow, this retired fellow. He knew he was different. He knew he had, he was very spiritual. He sort of understood the other side. What he didn't understand was this side, you know.
Right.
You know, how do I be a husband? How do I be a father? How do I grow up as a man?
He couldn't fit in, could he?
It was very difficult for him to. Yes, he fit in. But it was kind of lonely, kind of different. He couldn't tell anybody. You and I would call it play acting. How do I fit in here?
Were they frustrated?
Some of them were lost. Some of them were challenged. I can't say necessarily frustrated across the board, but I can say that they went through a whole, certainly a whole scheme of things here in trying to find out how do I make it in this world like everybody else is. Adults will integrate their experience. Children will compromise. The average adult, George, takes, 7 to 10 years to integrate their experience. The average child takes 20 to 40 years.
Wow.
That's because they compensate, they don't integrate.
That's amazing.
Well, you know.
What percent of them do you think, we're coming up on a break, so we'll talk about that in a second when I come back, but I want to find out what percent of the people who claim that they died are afraid of dying now, but keep that ready to go when we come back. PMH Atwater, our special guest, her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's her name. We're talking about her latest book called The Forever Angels, Near-Death Experiences in Childhood and Their Lifelong Impact. Our special guest tonight, PMH Atwater, the latest book, The Forever Angels. We will take calls with PMH next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, along with PMH Atwater, the latest book, of course, The Forever Angels. I love that title, PMH.
Well, good. I'm glad that you do.
Super. Now, of these 400-some people part of the study, how many, in your opinion, are afraid of dying at this point?
None.
None?
None that I know of.
Wow.
The
experience.
And these are people, George, from all over the world. In my study, I had three who were born in the voodoo religion. They didn't know anything about God. They didn't know anything about the Bible or Jesus or any of that stuff. Yet, in all three, Jesus came, was visited. They knew who Jesus was. They knew Jesus by name. So I'm wondering, how do I account for that? I can't account for that. I had several that were born into satanic cults. That is to say, the only reason the parents had the child is so that they could use the child in satanic rituals. And one of them, her name was Judy. She had 17 near-death experiences before the age of 9. The first was at 6 weeks.
17?
17.
Before the age of 9.
And I talk about her case in the book. Of course, she was very, very mixed up afterward. It took her a long time to, quote unquote, grow up. But when she finally did, a lot of counseling, a lot of help. But she said, hold on to your hat. She said, the most help she got was from yoga. Absolutely from yoga. Not from psychologists, not from psychiatrists, but from yoga teachers.
I believe that.
She did.
It helped her out.
Yeah, it did. But let's look at these kids, because 90%, that's a big number, 90% could not bond with their parents.
I believe that too. Because of these experiences.
Some of them somewhat, but most of them not at all. 82% had difficult family situations. Look, a young child who has a near-death experience will think differently than anybody else in the family. 9 chances out of 10, the child will see right through the parents, the siblings, the teachers, the school kids. They know what's going on. They can see above and beyond what's going on. Empathic, 84%. Highly intelligent, 75%. Let's look at the intelligence here for just a minute, because that is just, to me, that is just absolutely huge here. With these kids, 48%, when they were old enough to take the standard IQ test, 48% were scoring between 150 to 160 on standard IQ tests. I only found 4 that I could find genetic markers to explain this. But those under the age of 6, 81% were getting that score. Birth to 15 months, especially George's, they had a dark light experience instead of a bright light experience, were scoring 180 and higher.
Here.
So we have real evidence here to show that the younger the child, the greater the intelligence quotient afterward.
How many of them had psychic experiences after the fact?
No, most of them.
Yeah.
That's part of the after effects. Typical after effects afterward: heightened senses, vivid imagination, intellectual curiosity and drive, psychic, intuitive, loneliness, higher IQ, deeper capacity to care, great potential for an ethical path, aware of future moments, strongly independent, even if shy, non-linear development. Vivid dreams, 70%. We can go on and on. But turn to drug use, 46%. Turn to alcohol, 45%.
That's unusually high, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
What drives them to that?
Trying to figure out... what to do with their lives.
Yeah, they're puzzled.
You know, these incredible puzzles. But I want to spend a little bit of time here, a little bit more on intelligence, because most of them are abstracting by the age of about 2 or 3, certainly by the age of 4. What I mean by abstracting here, they're dealing with broad conceptual learning styles. In other words, instead of growing up and going into first grade, the regular style of teaching, concrete details, a little bit more as they grow up, they're coming in with these broad conceptual learning styles. Let me give you an example. This is a boy in the state of Georgia, first grade, drowns about halfway through school. Of course, is brought back as a near-death experience when he's able to get in school again, you know, comes back to school. George, what are they reading in the first grade? See, spot, run.
Run, exactly. Six, nothing sophisticated six. At all.
Right. This kid comes back reading Greek mythology and understands it, goes up to his teacher and says, why was the book Robinson Crusoe ever written? Well, of course,
teacher
the
doesn't know.
In such a state of shock, she has to pull the kid out of class. This is abstracting. What school in the United States is prepared for a first grader who can abstract?
None.
So you know what these kids are going through at school.
So they're frustrated.
And also synesthesia.
And bored.
Yes, bored out of their tree, in fact. But a lot of them have synesthesia. A synesthesia is an elaboration of the limbic system in the brain. That's our emotional brain. That's where our senses come from. That's how our emotions are handled. And most of them, many of them, most of them come back with multiple senses or blended senses. Let me give you an idea of synesthesia. This is from my own case. This is me. I was not a child experiencer, but I was born with synesthesia. So in the first grade, I was the only child in class who could smell color, see music, and hear numbers. So, you know, my sensory system was different than anybody else. So I had to spend most of the first grade sitting on top of a tall stool in front of the class, wearing a tall conical hat that said dunce on it, as an example of a bad child who told lies. The principal tried twice to bring my mother into school. They were going to kick me out of school. This went on and on the entire first grade. I knew I was telling the truth. Everybody else thought I was lying, including my mother. So after the first grade, I became strongly independent, and still am, I might add.
Yes, I could tell.
Yeah, but this is synesthesia. Even adults will get this after their near-death experience. The average near-death experiencer, when they go to buy a painting, for instance, they'll buy it according to how it sounds, not just how it looks.
Well, can these 400 people succeed in society, or are they all like outcasts?
Hey, they do very well. Strong spiritual guidance and knowing, 76%. Very successful career, 74%.
That's high.
Many of them, or some of them became millionaires afterward. Here's the puzzle. Here's the puzzle. That is 74% strong suicide ideation afterward. Now, let's talk about suicide or suicide ideation, wanting to commit suicide. In my first study with the little ones, I had a 21% suicide ideation rate. That alone is shocking.
Yeah.
In this one, 74%. In other words, it got stronger the longer they lived.
7 out of 10 of them wanted to kill themselves.
Well, there's this very, very strong feeling that they want to go back, no matter how. Now, let's stop for a minute and look at how a child looks at suicide. A child does not look at suicide as an adult does.
No.
They have no concept of hurting their family or causing anybody any grief. Their logic is quite different. Listen to this. When they were breathing, when they were not breathing, they were in a beautiful place with loving people. Now that they are breathing again, that beautiful place and loving people are gone.
Can they comprehend the difference, though? Do they understand the difference?
No.
I didn't think so.
The way to get back, is to stop their breathing. And that's exactly what many of them try to do. However,
so they figure if I stop breathing, I can go back to this wonderful place.
Beautiful place. However, they feel guilty for wanting to go back. They feel betrayed for being kicked out. So this issue of homesickness, there's a whole chapter in the book on PTSD versus NDEs. This whole issue of homesickness increases the longer they live. That's what we know now. They're not like the typical person who wants to commit suicide. Rather, they want to get back. No matter how successful the life, no matter how much they are in love with their family or people in their life, it's like that desire to go back never leaves. It's like that puzzle is never solved.
That's something else. I mean, and I would guess you were surprised at some of these results.
Oh, it blew me away. Absolutely blew me away, especially on the suicide ideation, especially on 90% losing their bonding or never having the bonding with parents to begin with.
How many of them experienced a religious type experience? Did they get into that?
Yes, religious, very few. Very few.
Are they all God believers, these 400 people?
Well, you know, I can't say that. What I can say is they're very much aware of a higher being, if you want to put it that way, a higher source. So many of them call that source God. Some use a different term, but they're very spiritual. Very spiritual, just incredibly so, and they certainly understand prayer.
Pretty dramatic stuff. PMH Atwater with us. Her book, of course, The Forever Angels. Where do people get the book, PMH?
Oh, they can get it anywhere. Amazon.com, their favorite bookstore. They can get it from me, even.
Right off your website. Perfect.
Oh, by the way, on my website, I produce a free monthly newsletter only for the curious.
And many of them are curious.
Yeah, if you're curious, you can get on them and you just sign up on my website.
We're going to take calls with you next hour. Of everything that you've experienced with this study, what was the one that surprised you the most? The high suicide attempt?
Yes. That surprised me the most.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And the fact that they're very uncomfortable with adult experiencers.
They are?
They are.
Why?
Because adults talk about love and light. Adults talk about life after death. And with kids, that's boring. Boring. They want to talk about what do I do here? How do I make this life important? This is extreme curiosity about art, science, math. They want to know how life works.
All right, well, stay with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls. Lots of people interested in what you do. PMH Atwater, probably one of the most, I would say, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the most experienced persons involved in near-death studies. And we're talking about her study that she's conducted for a long, long time of about 400 childhood experiencers, some of which were children, some of which were adults as well. So we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.